The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
Perth for the podcast, Kalichio Sunwa here at the Sam Kerr Football Centre doing a quick full-time whistle following the Women's NPL Night Series final. I've got Josh Chiat and Samantha Giddies with me. We've just witnessed a hilarious, in my opinion, 4-1 win for Perth Red Star over Balcatta. It didn't feel like a 4-1 game. It felt a lot weirder than a 4-1 game, but we'll go straight to you, Sam. Sam, what did you make of the game in total?
I think as a neutral, I would have preferred if maybe the first goal didn't go in so early. I think it kind of settled Red Star as exactly what they wanted and what they needed. And then it made Balcatta come out to try and play, and the gaps opened up a bit more, which Red Star... They just exploited those gaps and then went on, put on a bit of a clinic.
It was the 1v1 battles that really decided it today. If you look at the back line, and we know that Carlos Vega Mena's team, they're very conventional with the back four. They tend to be more defensive players than players that bomb forward on the wings, and pretty much everyone in that back four won the game against their immediate opponent. I thought Quinn Doan had a tough matchup against very pacey winger, and Lucy Jerram did a fantastic job for most of the game. Dunn, Teixeira, Studman, all really strong. I mean, we were talking about Jamie Lee Gale until probably the last 30 minutes of the game. I don't think she touched the ball. So Studman 100% won that battle hands down. And then you look at going forward, and Caitlin Douglas just gave whoever was on her an absolute run around. I think two assists, one of them, which I'm sure you're going to talk on because it filters into your "this was comical" storyline around the game. But she's going to be a massive, massive in for them coming into the Red Star lineup this season.
I think as well, you touched on the front line of Red Star, and I know I kind of said they put on a clinic. I think Alyssa Van Herk, although she's come on off as the losing team, I think some of the stuff,
the recovery stuff
today was really important. I think it could have been a lot more if it wasn't for her. So
I think her and Judy Connolly doing a lot of recovery work did really well, and they covered so much ground. We'll go and talk about the game. So first half started and it looked like Balcatta were in the ascendancy, and then boom, counterattack, goal. Douglas on the counter, is that what I saw? She just did the opposition for pace and got in behind and scored a goal.
I think Jaina Ridley slid the ball across. Yeah, so it's come out to Jaina Ridley. She slid the ball across, and Douglas coming in the back post. I think there were some warning signs early for Balcatta. I think Beck Bennett made, you know, three or four saves, and there were saves mostly that she should make, but she was under pressure a lot early on. And then it was as the game sort of wore on, then we saw Gabby Del Bosco have to come out, make a few big one-on-one saves, and we can probably talk about
her. We'll talk about her in a minute.
But I got the sense from the off that Red Star were the team that were really out there to play and take the bull by the horns. I think Balcatta really came into it when they went 2-0 down. They obviously got that goal maybe against the run of play from the corner from Monique Godding, which got them
let's
back into
go,
it.
Let's do this in proper motion here. So that's 1-0, right? That's 1-0. 2-0 happens, and not a whole lot happens in the game as both teams are trying to find their footing. But then, and like an incredible bit of play for Red Star, where they keep the ball for a full minute and a half, and they're just playing and playing and playing and playing and playing, work their way into a really great position. Cross comes in, and then what happens, Josh?
Beck Bennett's gone for the ball. She's gone to punch. She misses it, and poor Andrea Bulgaro, who you guys gave the big ups to last week for last week's game, and it's just smacked her on the side of the face, and rolled into the net. It's a really unfortunate one where, you know,
and this is where I say this is why I say this is comical,
obscured,
right?
Her view, yeah. And it's hit her and it's gone in. It's a terrible way to go down 2-0 as well, and that obviously just makes the task even harder, even if you think that 2-0 is still the most dangerous scoreline in football. Despite what analytics might
tell us. Of course. But the interesting thing about that is I remember turning to you, Josh, and saying in that moment, you can see exactly what Red Star are trying to do. You can see that they're trying to play football. You can see that some of the players can literally make blind passes. You can see they're all trying to keep the ball once they retain it. They stayed compact. They were terrific defensively. I don't think they get enough credit for just how monstrous they can be defensively. And then from a Balcata perspective, it was legitimately, can we get Kat Jukic on the ball and then hope that she does something magical? And it really felt that way, despite the fact that they've got some terrific players in their team and the likes of Abby Meekins and Judy Connolly, who didn't quite get on the ball a whole lot. But then, boom, they get a corner. What happens? Kat Jukic wins a header. And then
Minnie Godding pulled off the role, guarding the keeper. Yeah.
And you're going, oh, geez, it's now 2-1, but the team who has been the better team have now just conceded. So this could be that funny thing where it's like, all right, well, geez, like you were all on top. The other team's now scored. Now can they get the ascendancy?
Yeah, I think Kat actually screams as well. Like, follow that up. So I think she probably needs some credit tonight because obviously she's not here as consistently as she probably wants to be with her work. But I think she did as well. Like she's gonna be getting older, Kat, but. She's probably not, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, like all of us. But
not actually a controversial statement there, Sam.
Thank you.
You as well, Sam.
No, thank you. I think she was pulling strings for Balcata tonight at times. And it looked, throughout the game for me, like, I don't know, you mentioned, like, I'm a big fan of Judy Connolly and stuff like that. But, and Mongodin and Abby in the midfield, but it's, for me, it just felt like if they were ever going to unlock Red Star, it was going to be through some, like, cat magic.
But there was potentially a bit of controversy, as you pointed out, Sam, wasn't there? That it could well have been 2-2.
I'm not too sure. There's a free kick given in the centre of the field and Balcata have taken it. Quickly, they've got on with the game.
Yeah, Abby Meekins has popped it over the top.
Yeah, put Lucy Jerome through, and she, I mean, look, the whistle's gone as she's hit it, so Dabusko has obviously stopped running, so maybe it would have been different if she hadn't stopped. Maybe she would save it, but she just put the ball in the back of the net, to bring it back for whatever reason. So if that goes in at 2-2, if it's 2-2 half-time, ifs, buts, maybes, speak absolutes.
Yeah. And this is the really interesting thing is that second half starts, and for all intents and purposes in that first half, Balcata really could not create play. They didn't really feel comfortable at all, and they weren't playing it into that midfield like you mentioned earlier. Second half starts, and they're doing it. It's a lot more composure at the back. They're playing it into Connolly. They're playing it into Meekins. They're playing it into Godding, and They play. The ball gets to Kat Jukic, edge of the box. Annie Teixeira comes in, makes this great tackle to win play. They counterattack, go down the end, and Douglas just goes, you know what, I'm just going to run past two players and square it off to Sarah Carroll, and now it's 3-1. And I think from a coaching perspective, you've got to be like, you've got to be kidding me. We've the one thing that I've said, hey, we need to do this, we do it. We get to the edge of the box, we have a great chance, and then just some magic, some individual bit of brilliance makes it now 3-1. And I'm just cracking up because I'm going, like, how do you legislate for that as a team? How do you legislate for that as a team? And to the credit of Alicia Van Herk, she goes, you know what? I'm going to change sides and make sure that this doesn't happen again. And it doesn't necessarily happen again because she recovers. But that's how it becomes 3-1. And then Red Star just decide, hey, we're just going to sit back and see if we can get one more on the counter.
Yeah, but then Balcata have a lot of chances after that. And there's a big change from Peter Rakic. He brings on EJ Dowse, goes to the three at the back. Davies moves forward, Jerome moves more to like a wing back position. Monique Prinsloo goes on. They have a little bit more.
Monique Prinsloo comes on and
pace and threat in behind that they didn't have before with just Kat as a lone striker. And Gabby Del Bosco ends up making, you know, two or three really big saves. And it's also the other stuff she does. She comes out and she punches.
She looks so
balls,
assured.
Composed. She catches a late ball when the game's iced and dives on the ground because she's smart and she knows how to play the game.
I counted three big time significant saves in one-on-one situations.
And if you look at the scoreline, it was like 4-1.
It was literally 4-1. It's literally 4-1. And I can only imagine that it is not quite bitter, but very sweet for her because she played for Balcata for a number of years and she's not playing there anymore and she's just won a trophy.
Yeah, and I think that just going back to the third goal as well for Red Star, probably psychologically important for them as well, because if you look at last year, they were 2-0 up in the night series final against Rakic's old team, Perth, which had a lot of the same players that are on the pitch tonight who've come across with him from Perth to Balcata, and that ended up going to 2-2.
And Balcata huff and puff and huff and puff. And like we said, some big time saves from Del Bosco. And then in the last minute of the game, there's a free kick to Red Star. It's on the top of the box. Douglas stands over the free kick. It's won by Olivia Wood, who's just come on the field. But Olivia Wood just kind of peels away, 6 yards away, goes to her left-hand side. Douglas looks up as if she's about to hit the free kick. It's inside the D. Balcata defense drop back, but she doesn't shoot, does she? Sam, what does she do?
She lays it off very, very sweetly. And then it is very, very sweetly again cushioned into the far corner.
But is anyone near her? Is anyone near Olivia Wood, who's literally just walked 5 yards to the left and no one's near her?
Yeah, no, I think... Well, I also think there was only... Was it only Olivia Wood and...
Conti,
who was in the box?
Yeah.
Everyone else was back. But was Carlos calling that? I think he called it, didn't he? He was telling them, he was sharing their names, right?
I just remember hearing him say 5v2, 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 as if to say, hey, we need more players to come back. But it was just, it was wild. And this is where I think it's hilarious, because I genuinely think in that second half, Balcata played better than they did in the first half. I think they tried to play more football. I think they had a little bit more control. I think you've got to give Red Star a lot of credit because they said, you know what, we don't need to score right now. Katie Ritchie worked Balanca. She played very, very well. Did a really good job to man mark Abby Meekin. So, like, defensively speaking, they did a really, really good job. But it's just, like, if you're coaching, you're just super frustrated because you've gone, we've set up how to play, we've started doing it, we give away a cheap goal, we try to get back into it, we make a bunch of chances, some big time saves, and then we can see the fourth by just, you said you just stopped playing, Josh.
Yeah, it felt like they'd sort of
the 89th minute,
they'd accepted,
right?
It, yeah. They'd gone in, they got past denial, they'd gone into the acceptance mode of grief, and even though they did have a chance afterwards that Abby Meekins put wide of the post, and actually, which could probably bring up that they squandered some chances as well. It wasn't just the saves. I think Abby Meekins had a good chance to make it 3-2 with a close header that she stooped down to and put over the bar from a couple metres out. But, it was sort of like, it was almost that the game's going into garbage time, and I think they just completely switched off. I mean, Pete's body language was like, he wasn't impressed with it. Because if you're a coach, you know that, yeah. Sam, like if your players are, like that simple stuff, right? Like you get enough players back
You're against this, like a Red Star team that's smart, like what you've been saying, Kel, like where they're going to be hard to break down, and not only is it a final, you're now chasing a 2-goal deficit, and to even make it level, and then it's the 89th minute. Like what? What do you mean?
And they've just decided she's going to shoot. Something you did pick up on. You mentioned Balanca and Ritchie before. I mean, really impressive because they're kind of unsung heroes. I think they did like a lot of graft in midfield. I mean, Katie Ritchie's come a long way going from, you know, captaining Perth's under 21s a couple of years ago to winning a title last year in the Red Star first team to now being, you know, a 5 foot nothing enforcer, like, you know, a Claude Makélélé type on the pitch.
And I think that's an important message that younger players need to recognise, because I think a lot of the time you get given...
You feel like you get pigeonholed early in terms of what your level is?
No, not necessarily, but you might be given... A Red Star team, for example, they might say to you, like they said to Katie Ritchie, hey, come and play for our 21s, you'll be on the bench for the first team. We'll give you minutes when you get the opportunity. But then someone else will be like, hey, come and play, we'll give you first team minutes, or, you know, like, you can come... But what are you going to achieve at 16, 17... You've got, just relax, just, you've got a bit of time, just learn your trade, learn your craft. So then when you do step in, you're not just the same level you were. Like, you are getting better, you're around better players. So then when you get your opportunity for a team like Red Star, you do what Katie Ritchie's doing. She's like, no, I'm not good now. I'm ready to be here. I deserve to be here now. I've done my time. And I think that's an important message for younger players.
And I think the big thing that we kind of noticed from the side here is Red Star are just so well coached. They are just so well coached. Every player knows exactly what they need to do. The infrastructure is there that you can put players in, and you're not necessarily looking over your shoulder being like, oh, we don't have Jay Coleman anymore. What are we going to do? Oh, we don't have Kim Carroll anymore. What are we going to do? Oh, Sarah Carroll's now playing number 9. Who's going to fill in at centre half? Everyone knew what they wanted to do. And yeah, I'm so interested to see what this team looks like. And they don't have Reina Kagami, the league's best player last season. We've still got a bunch of glory players who are going to come back and potentially join that team, potentially join other teams as well. It's going to be such a spicy season, and I can't wait to get started. Any more on this final, anybody? All right, well, look, we've got some NPL games happened over the weekend. We've got a quick insert to add from Tommy Dolman. He spoke to Kieran Byrne as well as he covered Stirling's 3-2 win over Perth SC last night. So we'll transition into that right
now.
Hey, everybody, Tommy here. Just got back from Dorrien Gardens. Friday night football under the lights, round 2 of the NPL WA men's competition. And if there's anything I've learnt in covering this league over the years, it's to expect the unexpected. Full-time score was Perth Soccer Club 2, Stirling Macedonia 3. But that does not begin to tell the tale of the tape. It was a first 20 minutes or so, really, where there was no tension. Neither goalkeeper had a save to make, and there was no real action in either box until Ryan Moulton fouled Ethan Banks in the penalty area. David Ninkovic, who missed the decisive spot kick in last season's penalty shootouts in the preliminary final, which saw Perth KO'd and Stirling progress to a top 4 cup final, which they won, had the responsibilities, and Ninkovic had his moment of redemption as he put the ball low past Liam Pryson into the back of the net for 1-0 Perth. 1-0 became 2-0 just 2 minutes later. Banks, this time with a free kick, a wicked ball curled in onto the head of Gordon Perkins, who stylishly did really well to turn that towards the target, and it went in. Liam Pryce rooted to the spot. Little kiss off the inside of the post on its way through, but that was a really good header from Gordon Perkins, who's off the mark for the season. And it was a lead that Perth probably deserved on the balance of play, because Stirling really struggled to get in their stride in that opening 45 minutes. A curler from Calvin Whitney was probably the closest they came, as Joe Pollard had to acrobatically fingertip away, and it all seemed to just be drifting towards halftime with no real sort of remaining tension to be had. That was until both Federico Achille and Dejan Spaseski both picked up second yellow cards in first half stoppage time, which means both teams had to play the second half with only 10 men. Ultimately, that turned out to be the turning point in the game, as well as 4 changes from Ian Ferguson early in the second period, none more so than striker Kieran Byrne, who wasn't 100% coming into the game. He was feeling a little under the weather earlier in the week, and he was only ready to start on the bench tonight, but boy, did he make an impact. More on him later. What Stirling were able to ultimately do, though, with the additional space in the middle, which was sort of vacated by Achille and Spaseski, was get their ball players more involved in the game. Calvin Whitney was suddenly dropping deeper and dictating the game a lot more. Giles Davies, we know he's a real energizer bunny in the middle of the pitch for Stirling. He was up and down, up and down. And Stirling were just able to get the game completely on their terms. And the energy from Fernall and Matthews, who both came off the bench, really sort of helped them as well to provide that additional spark. But ultimately, the game's most important player came on at the 54-minute mark, and by minute 68, he had a hat-trick. Kieran Byrne, we know he can score goals. He netted a dozen for Olympic Kingsway in the top flight last season. Came on to score three times. Three strikers, finishers, really. The first of those was after Calvin Whitney's long ball over the top was latched onto by the forward, who rattled in a left-footed shot past Pollard in the Perth goal. The second one, he followed in after a header was partially cleared by the Azzurri's rear guard. He planted a firm nod down into the bottom corner from a decent distance out, which gave the goalkeeper no chance, and that tied it up at two apiece. And two became three for Stirling when Byrne was able to pick up Calvin Whitney's pass and prod past the goalkeeper for 3-2. And by that time, you could see the tide had well and truly turned, and it was a staggering Stirling comeback, which ultimately gave them their first 3 points of the season, despite a couple of late scares provided to them by Perth, while Stirling could have also gone up the other end in second half stoppage time and made it four had Danny Douglas been able to put his one-on-one chance either side of Pollard. So a terrific fight back from Stirling overall. We know what they're capable of when they do want to turn it on, and they most certainly did that in the second period tonight. They go to one win and one loss on the season and into mid-table with the 3 points that will do them the world of good ahead of next week's headline clash with Bayswater City at Macedonia Park. Perth, meanwhile, 0-2 on the season and having lost 1-0 to promoted Western Knights last week. A loss in a deflating fashion, as that one tonight will require a little bit of picking up from the coaching staff and the senior players at the club. So after a dramatic night of action, I went down and caught up with arguably the man of the match in Kieran Byrne. Here's what he had to say, and then it's back to you, Kalichi.
Perth Football Podcast, Tommy here. After witnessing a sensational Stirling comeback, they were 2-0 down away at Perth Soccer Club. Both teams were down to 10 men, and then off stepped probably the man of the match, fair to say, Kieran Byrne. Kieran, well done on the performance. First of all, what's the mood like in the dressing room after a win like that?
Yeah, first win in the season is always good. The boys are over the moon with it. It was show good character to come back from 2-0 down, and I think we deserved it in the end. That was good.
What was the message at halftime? Because fair to say, the boys weren't really in their stride. We've seen Stirling play a lot better than that over the past couple of seasons since they've been back in the top flight. So what was the message from Fergie and the coaching staff?
Well, I wasn't in the dressing room, but he made a couple of changes at halftime. You could see they were kind of overrunning us a bit in the middle. But I think the game really changed when the two send-offs happened. It's just created a bit more space out there and gave us good opportunities going forward.
I was going to say that it almost allowed Giles and Calvin to get a little bit more on the ball and to be more influential, whereas Perth did a pretty good job at containing the supply to the strikers in the first half. Is that how you saw the game?
Yeah, that's how we've seen it, yeah. Louis came on, he ran his socks off up there as well, created a bit more space for me, I suppose, and three chances came my way, and luckily enough I took them, so...
What is it about you that makes you such a good goal scorer, Kieran? Because you've been doing it in the leagues, not just in the NPL last season, 12 goals, but you were the Golden Boot winner in 2021 with Western Knights. You then backed it up with another 20 in Kingsway's promotion season. What is it about goal scoring with you, mate?
I don't know. I mean, I always back myself. Like, if I get the service, I know I'll score the goals, you know. I know what sort of player I am. I feed off crosses and, you know, half chances in the box, so yeah. I can just keep doing that all year. Hopefully go well, get a few more.
How important is it to get that first 3 points of the season then for the season going forward, particularly after the disappointing defeat last week?
Yeah, last week was a bit disappointing, knowing that we didn't really perform at our best. But 3 points today, hopefully kick us on now. I think we have Bayswater next week, so not a tough game. So they're coming in ticking fast, but hopefully this could build our confidence and we go again.
And I was going to say, Bayswater are going to be one of those teams towards the top of the league, like yourselves and like Kingsway, who you played last weekend. Is there going to be a real appetite this week to make sure that you do sort of give yourselves a better chance against one of the top sides this weekend coming up?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good teams in this league, and you have to be consistent every week, you know. So, yeah, let's just hope we can game by game and get 3 points next week.
Just one last thing as well. You told me before we did this interview that you've not been feeling the best this week. So I did ask you whether you were going to come off the bench. Whether you were scheduled to start or come off the bench. But in the end, mate, you might just have to start coming off the bench every week if you're going to score goals like that.
That's what John said. He said, oh, I might start from the bench every week. But, yeah, no, I've been sick. So, look, I'm just happy I came on, helped the team, got 3 points. So that's all that matters.
Yeah. Rest up, mate. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tommy, and thank you so much, Kieran. Really, really appreciate that. There was other games that happened today in the 3 o'clock games. Crazy result with Bayswater beating Olympic Kingsway 5-1. Came from behind. It was 0 at halftime. It was 1-0 after 56 minutes, and then it was 5-1 at full time. We'll cover that on Monday. We also had a 1-0 win for Western Knights, who are top of the league right now.
Are they top of the league with a +2 goal difference
plus
after
two
games?
Hey, 1-0 is plenty, and I love it. So we'll cover that more on Monday. Floriat Athena had a 1-1 draw with Perth Glory. We'll cover that on Monday. And Josh, where were you today?
I was down at Hilton Park for Fremantle City, obviously linked to the old East Fremantle Tricolore. So it was the first time in 37 years that that part of Fremantle has had a top flight men's game in Perth played there after East Fremantle Tricolore went into the old Perth Italia merger back in the early 1990s. So it was a really massive day for them, massive crowd down there. And I actually did tip them because I thought after the Western Knights win against Perth, I thought, you know, a team coming into any team that gets promoted, their first home game is a big emotional blockbuster for them. And they delivered the goods, although they looked awful for the first 30, 35 minutes. They somehow got the opening goal with their first shot after giving up 13 chances.
Love it.
To an Armadale side who started well but ran over the top of them in the second half for a massive 4-1 win. Alex McLean with 2 goals. I think you said he's now top of the goal scoring charts, having both playing
Gordon Smith and Kieran Byrne.
Yeah, so both playing in the number 10, not being a natural striker, and also coming up back through the State League to make it to NPL first team level, having not quite got there with Bayswater a couple years ago. And we do have a bit of a chat with Alex and one of the other goal scorers, Alex Siller, coming up.
No.
Josh here from the Perth Football Podcast. A blustery day. We got the Freo Doctor blowing through, but it was Fremantle City who blew through their opposition, Armadale Football Club, 4-1. The first time in 37 years that we've seen football down in this part of top flight football down in this part of Fremantle since the dissolution of the old or merger of the old East Fremantle Tricolore into Perth Italia almost 4 decades ago. Alex McLean, Alex Siller, two of the goal scorers here with me. Must be an absolutely massive occasion for yourselves as a club, and especially getting a 4-1 victory against an established NPL side like Armadale.
Yeah, obviously it's an exciting day for the club. Obviously the first NPL game in the club's history. Makes it special coming up from State League after a good season last year. But today I think we started off pretty poor. The first half, we were pretty lucky to go in at 1-0 at half-time. But second half, change of formation, and I think we were the better team by miles. Obviously scoring 4 goals, can't ask for much more.
And 2 sensational goals from you, Alex. The brilliant header off Pat Lowry's cross, and the great finish into the top corner after the layoff from Robbie Petkov. For yourself, it's been a long journey back into the NPL. You're with the 20s of Bayswater a few years ago. You've been at Forest Field. You've been down at Freo for a couple of years. What does it mean to be back making your mark at the NPL level after being down to the State League for a couple of seasons?
Yeah, so firstly, obviously starting the season with 3 goals now. Just getting them positions from number 10. I know Pat's always going to put the ball in the box for me, and then Rob's going to hold it up for me and set me off for a shot. And yeah, obviously it's been a couple of years in the State League, leaving Baysie just to get some minutes in the first team, get my confidence up and everything, and now back in the NPL, yeah, couldn't be happier, and you know, makes it a bit better beating AV, my old Bayswater coach, so obviously winning a lot of trophies there makes it special.
Alan Vernals, I'm sure he'll have the opportunity to try and get the wood over you later in the season. Alex Silla, for you, a little bit of a different story. 2 years really basically written off by injury after that fantastic season you have for Perth a couple seasons ago. What did it mean to get back on the pitch and score with what was probably close to your first touch out there, playing an unfamiliar role in the 10?
It was pretty awesome. Hey, it's been a really long 20 months, and lots of ups, lots of downs, but you do it all again for moments like that. Such a special day for myself, but more importantly, the club. First game in the NPL and against Armidale, who, you know, have had a great night series and have signed some good players. So it gives us lots of confidence going into the rest of the season.
And 4 points in 2 games to start off the season. You must be feeling pretty sprightly, but then as any level-headed, media-trained footballer would tell you, it's a long campaign to come.
It is. And we know from my time at Perth that you can start the season however you want, but it's what matters at the end of the season. And, you know, we've had two really good games to start the season, 4 tough ones to come up, so we'll be looking to grab lots more points.
All right, thank you very much, lads. Go enjoy the celebrations.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Alex. And thank you, Alex. Ladies and gentlemen, that is all the time we have for the full-time whistle. We did do a quick interview with Colin Costello and Christopher Lynch at East Perth following their 2-1 win over Asheville. So check that out on our socials. And we're about to go do another interview with one of the Red Star, maybe 2 of the Red Star players. We'll see if we can get one.
Yeah, I do. I think, from what I could work out down there, I believe Caitlin Douglas was awarded the Player of the Match award
Tracy
as well.
Tracy Wheeler Medal. So shout out to her. Could have gone to Gabby Douglas to make sure that the goalkeepers keep it in the goal.
Gabby Del Bosco.
Why did I say Gabby Douglas?
You just mixed them.
Gabby Douglas actually was a footballer at McLean's College back when I was at high school.
I think Gabby Douglas was also the Flying Squirrel, the great American gymnast.
Look, that is, obviously you can see it's 10:30 at night. So we'll leave it at that. Say goodbye, Sam.
See ya.
Say goodbye, Josh.
See ya later.
And be careful and be kind. Look after yourselves and toodaloo. Bye.
Bye.